visit us online at investinvermont.org. That's investinvermont.org.
For nearly two decades, the team at PowerShift has been helping Vermont businesses make the most out of their online presence. PowerShift builds sites that are easy to edit, eliminating the need for costly developer maintenance. Want to change a photo? Done. Need to update your address? No problem. PowerShift is shifting the power of web design into your hands. Give us a call to schedule your free website consultation at 802-253-6287 or visit us online at www.powershift.biz. PowerShift. Local web design. Global results.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. A fabulous Monday. Thanks for spending part of it, your morning with us. Coming up, I want to thank Andy Polino for spending part of his morning with us, too. Coming up on the program in just a moment here, we are going to talk with the Corrections Commissioner. We're going to talk about this proposal to close the jail down in the southern part of the state, down in Windsor. That'll be among the topics. I think that may have been the only one I mentioned to him we're going to talk about. So all the other ones will be a fabulous surprise. And, of course, your phone calls are welcome on the program as well. In our second hour this morning, John Walters and Neil Goswami, two political reporters covering the State House, will join us. We'll get us up to date on what is going on under the Golden Dome. Later this hour, too, we'll also find out about this fabulous game that's been going on now for 4 years in Vermont that tries to encourage people to become more aware about climate change and also their energy use. So we'll have a variety of topics coming up on the program this morning. You can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. And toll-free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. Hope you had a fabulous weekend. Commissioner, thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
Good. Thank you for having me on.
How was your weekend?
It was actually pretty nice. The weather was not quite as warm as I had hoped, but yesterday was beautiful.
God, yesterday was really. Wasn't that nice? Finally got a little taste of something nice out there. Let's talk about this proposal to, as I think most people that are listening to this program know, the state of Vermont has a bit of a budget challenge this year, and the idea, one of the ideas presented to close this $100 million plus gap is to close the facility down in Windsor. Did you have a big objection to this?
So I have to tell you, this is my 23rd, 24th year of putting budgets together for the state. I've been doing the DOC budget, the Department of Corrections budget, for 15 years. This is a particularly challenging year. And it's got a lot of different decisions in it that are challenging, are going to be challenging. And so we had a proposal to reduce the high school, and which kind of is still in a kind of moving a little bit. We're not really sure what the House Appropriations did, but the Windsor facility has been on and off the table over the last handful of years. And really what the decision point is, what we're trying to do is retrack the out-of-state program. That's been a goal of the state and the Department of Corrections for at least 10 years. And part of that comes from having to pay an out-of-state provider, the difficulty in managing a population that's out-of-state versus in-state. We really don't get a chance to work with people because they're moving out-of-state. Now, we've reduced that population by half. It was upwards of 700 and projected to go well over 1,000. And we're down to 339 this morning and projected to go down to the low 300s by the end of April.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been a stated goal. It is cheaper to house people out of state, but it comes with all these other complications. And so the decision is, do you ship more people out of state or do you house them in state? And so Windsor has been on and off the table, I don't know, at least three times in the last handful of years. And I have to tell you, one of the things about running the department is we have a lot of public policy conversations about how it should be run. But when something goes wrong, the public policy conversation about who's responsible takes about 3 seconds. And so when we have these conversations, it concerns me because I have a vacant superintendent down there right now. And trying to recruit for that position is going to be incredibly difficult.
Right.
A handful of years ago, the legislature made all the superintendents of correctional facilities exempt. So there's that complication. And so it is concerning. And we need those staff to pay attention to what they're doing when they're working. And so if we make the decision, we either have to make it or not make it. But we keep kind of going back to it. And that's the part that concerns me, is if you're a staff person trying to figure out or trying to keep yourself safe while you're on your daily tours or whatnot, and then you're worried about, can I pay my mortgage? Because we keep having this conversation. Then recruiting for positions. I mean, these are the same people that have to keep their eye out for the guy who cut a hole in the fence in Windsor a few years ago. So it is a little bit challenging to run a program when it's constantly under the scope. One thing I will say, and I know I've run on here for 5 minutes, but the Department of Corrections introduced a budget this year that was...
That's all right. I'll wait as long as it takes to get the answer.
The Department of Corrections this year, I'm sorry, was in for a 0.0 budget increase. It's pretty remarkable given where the Department of Corrections budget was a decade ago.
Right, yeah.
In the last handful of years, it's been less than 2% on average, around 2%, which is less than inflation. And so I think we've done a pretty remarkable job of managing the budget, and yet it still draws all this attention to all these other components. I'll stop there.
Mm-hmm. So am I hearing that this was sort of the least bad of a bunch of bad options?
That's right. That's probably a good way of putting it. The way we came down onto the high school reduction was, what can we cut in the DOC that represents the least amount of risk to the overall program? Our program is public safety and safe offender reentry. That's kind of it in a nutshell, right? So what can we reduce? Because we don't have the ability to enact our own budget in the DOC. We have to, we work for an administration, so on and so forth. And so we rank them based on what's going on, and the high school was at the top of the heap. Now, still, even cutting the high school represents some risk to the DOC, right? And then you get down to closing a facility. Cutting the high school, I think, affected around 23 or 24 staff. Closing Windsor is around 55 staff, and so every one of these affect more and more staff. And so on and so forth. So there aren't any places, I feel, given that the budget's been pretty reasonable, that we can cut that's basically, I don't know what you'd call it, extra to the budget. We don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. We went through reductions during the Douglas administration that kind of reduced the central office staff. Now, that's always where you would go first.
Right.
We reduced it by a lot, or a number, a lot in terms of raw numbers. And we haven't added those back. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have the luxury of saying, yeah, we'll just take one of these or one of those. We don't have a principal assistant. We only have one deputy. We really don't have a chief of operations. And so those aren't positions that we can go to reduce at this point.
When you figure out what the savings are by closing Windsor, can you tell me how the math works on this?
Essentially what you do is, what does it cost to run a building? And I'll just use a raw number. So if it costs $10 million to run a building, so if you shut it down, you save whatever it is, that $10 million less, whatever it costs to maintain the building. Because the state still owns the building, and you still have to pay to heat it or whatnot, whatever it costs to basically leave a vacant building. So that gets you some number. Then you add back the number of inmates that are in that jail, what it would cost you to put them out of state at the out-of-state rate. And that's how you devise the savings. And so one of the things the legislature has asked us to do is to contemplate closing Windsor and release 100 people so you get the full savings. I'm telling you, after 9 years of being an exempt in this department, if I thought I could release 100 people today without aggravating public safety, we would have done it. We also have in statute a responsibility to have a quantified recidivism rate and a reduction target. I don't feel that we can just let 100 people out into a community and not aggravate that recidivism rate. So there's got to be some forgiveness that behaviors may be different than they are now, because we're getting into a population that maybe we feel could use a little more time in jail, need a much more extensive reentry planning process.
If you let out 100 people today, Andy, who would get out?
So one of the bones of contention between the Department of Corrections and the legislature has been what we call our lack of housing list. So we maintain a list of people that could get out of jail if they had an appropriate residence. There may be some other factors, but the residence is the predominant piece to it.
Mm-hmm.
I ran the list And that list has grown. Even though our population is shrinking, the number of transitional housing sites in the community that are available is around 300. We have reentry specialists and so on and so forth. That list is growing. And I think a part of that is we're getting to the end of sentences for a lot of people, which is why the overall population is decreasing. I had our staff break that population down. Of the 250 people, two-thirds of that list had are convicted of a violent crime. And half of that list had a high-risk score to reoffend. So that's one population. Then the second part of that is a low risk to reoffend, but still convicted of a violent crime. So if they reoffend, even though it's a lower risk, they already have a history of violence. Then the third population, there was about 70 people on the list who are convicted of a nonviolent crime,
right?
But also high risk to reoffend. So a lot of the people that we are picking up from out of state coming and dealing drugs are in that category. So nonviolent crime, potentially high risk to reoffend. So they're not really interested in fashioning a reentry plan, finding an appropriate place to live. This is kind of a way of life for them. So that's the choice we have.
Uh-huh.
So if I had to release 100, I would say go to the nonviolent risk, high risk to reoffend, and just start making release decisions that are in a vacuum to maybe appropriate residences or whatnot. Legislature passed a statute a few years ago that said if you're nonviolent and low risk, you can't hold them for lack of housing. And so we scour that list all the time to make sure we're not doing that.
Dealing drugs in the community is a nonviolent offense.
Could be a nonviolent offense, depending on what you're picked up on, yeah. And so a lot of people that we have that are in these different categories of crimes fit different criteria, and that's why I'm saying we do a good job in the department of figuring this out. One of the things that I'm also watching is the number of criminal charges brought in criminal court in Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
The number that are against people that we supervise, and that number has been dropping. And so kind of metering all this out and putting together a program without tinkering with one individual piece in a vacuum is really, in my opinion, how you do these things. And so if you're going to ask the DOC, how would you live within this particular budget target, then I think you got to take our opinion on that and weight it pretty heavily, as opposed to make a different decision process. Or if you're going to make a different decision process, give us some time to evaluate that. Now, I know in this budget environment, that could still be a little bit tricky. Like I said, I've never seen a budget this challenging.
So you're not being a bit of an alarmist here, because I remember when you were talking about cutting the high school program, the community high school program, that you were saying, well, you know, if we don't cut this program, we're going to have to let out sex offenders. And I thought, really?
Yeah, that was probably... Did I actually say that?
Yeah, you said something pretty close to that. At least that's how I took it.
Oh, all right, well, that's different. So I didn't necessarily say that. That's how you took it.
Well, you said.
I don't want to get in an argument with you. But at any rate, so no, what I'm suggesting is...
All right. Well, what did you think you said?
I don't remember, to tell you the truth. Well, what I probably said and what I have said in the past is if you don't take our initial recommendation, then we bump up the risk for every subsequent decision that we have to make. So,
and I'm sort of hearing in this discussion here about Windsor that if you want to comply with what the legislature wants to do, you're going to have to let out some pretty bad characters.
We're going to have to, in order to do this, let out people that we have signaled otherwise we're not ready to let out. That's my quote. So I'm not drawing a connection to a particular crime or a particular band of crimes, because frankly I don't have them all memorized. I'm only going to, we have three categories to choose from. Excuse me. Violent, which has either high or low risk, or nonviolent with a high risk to reoffend. Those are the categories we have to choose from. And so that's
so
the
pot. So there are no low risk to offend nonviolent people left.
They're all out.
They're all out.
So where appropriate, they're out. And so those are the conversations that we have to have internally in order to comply with how this is written. Now, the legislature did give us a year. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be an alarmist.
Right.
They did give us a year to fashion this plan. And I don't know. I guess what I'm stumbling on is how we're going to fashion it, because I don't have a silver bullet on this.
So there's, is there a prohibition on you? Because there's a minimum number of inmates you're supposed to have out of state in order to not get some kind of penalty or sanctions.
Yeah, so
can't you just float a few more out of state here on this?
And close Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could. And so that's a whole different decision-making process, which is, that's a different savings target, too, by the way.
Smaller
savings target, okay, that's right. Yeah. That would require moving, so we have about 100 people housed in Windsor, shipping them out of state, and then closing the facility, just maintaining the building or turning it back to the town, however we put that plan together. But that's a much less risky plan from a public safety point of view. It still lays off 55 or so people, has a big impact to the town of Windsor. People that are in the Windsor facility get day for day. So we have to kind of, the savings is a little bit less when you close Windsor. You know, there's a lot of free labor that comes out of that facility that goes to the local town. It's interesting, there's an editorial in the Caledonia Record this morning by the editor who says, don't close Windsor, take St. Johnsbury.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the superintendent to call them and let them know that a number of people that work in these institutions, the free labor that people get from having people housed in state, and the overall public safety that you get from having Vermonters housed in Vermont jails as opposed to out of state, it just makes it a lot easier to run that risk. And I think the big thing here is we had conversations, 10 years ago, corrections, the fastest growing part of the budget.
Yep.
That's not true for the last handful of years. And so we've changed that conversation a little bit. And I think all of these conversations have to happen in the construct of public safety and the budget. So it's both pieces. And I would submit that right now we're doing a pretty remarkable job of managing our budget. So
mm-hmm.
I don't want to be an alarmist, but there is a reality to the decisions that we make and how they turn out.
So. Can you, I missed the editorial in the Caledonia Record. Why would somebody in St. Johnsbury be arguing to close down the facility in St. Johnsbury?
I only read it quickly.
I mean, usually they're arguing to close somebody else.
It's called the don't take theirs, take ours, or something like that.
Really?
He's saying that I assume it was a he. I don't know who it is that wrote the editorial, but that we are putting people in the community that don't belong there, so on and so forth. And so I think that there's some work that we need to do. If there's a feeling like that, there's work that we need to do in letting the community know that, we're a good partner in this. Now, Windsor, on the other hand, is speaking out against closing Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, we give free labor to the town. We do things like a number of years ago, they needed boxes where you could put dog waste. We built all the boxes for the community, so they're throughout the community. We maintain the cemetery down there because our inmate cemetery is in the back of their cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we do license plates and those signs and those sorts of things within that facility. We have a greenhouse. We have a community cleaning project where we take surplus food, and we clean them, we bag them, and ship them to the local food shelves and so on and so forth. There's like 60,000 pounds of food through that program. So there's a lot of things that come back through the facility that we don't necessarily get anywhere else.
Penny wise and pound foolish?
I think it's just a longer conversation that needs to happen as a result of that facility. But
244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Let me take a moment of your time. We'll get back to our discussion here with Andy Polito in just a moment. Let me take a moment of your time for our friends at Jet Service Envelope. If you're looking for an outstanding local printer, make it our friends at the Jet. You can reach them at 229-9335, 229-9335. They can do everything from publishing your book to maybe your annual report. Maybe your annual report. Maybe I'll advertise for that in a couple of more months here because they're beginning of the year here. But maybe you're putting on a new trifold brochure to tell everybody about your fabulous operation, whether it's for-profit or not. And you can make that trifold happen at Jet Service Envelope easily. Give them a call at 229-9335 and on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. Commissioner, so where do things stand with the high school proposal?
So we're still trying to work our way through. They made a couple of different changes on the high school that I can't really, have our finance office trying to figure out exactly what we did and trying to feedback through the appropriations committee. But what it appears they did was we put in a proposal to reduce the high school by $1.7 million and change. I think that was the administration's proposal. That would have reduced 20-plus teachers, reduced all of our field sites, and some of our facilities down to a few, and we would deliver it like we do in other places, where, like we do with other programs. So if you have a need for sex offender treatment programming in a state, you go to a specific facility, we move you, and you go in with a bunch of people who have the same need. So that was the original proposal. What they've asked us to do is some of those need-reducing programs that I just mentioned, not deliver it through contracts, which is the way we do it now, but deliver it through the teachers. And so reduce the contracts by a specific amount, but keep the high school intact. And so we're just trying to figure out how exactly that is going to work. And so, you know, obviously we have the high school very much in favor of doing that, and I think they could probably do it. I'm just not clear as to, and we're still working through the details, which programs we could reduce that wouldn't aggravate that overall public safety need and comply with the legislation. So at this point, it's still very much on the drafting stage. What's also unclear is House Education sent a letter over to Appropriations and said we're comfortable with a reduction to the high school of 250. I can't figure out if that's also in there, and so I have our high school director going back to our props, House Appropriations contact, and trying to figure out what exactly did you do so that we can put a plan together and deliver it back to you.
We're talking with the Corrections Commissioner, Andy Polito. You can join us at 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free, 877-291-8255. Are there any other reductions you made in the budget?
Those are the only two that were kind of talked about. We're reducing our overall out-of-state program. And so that's... Actually, there are a couple more. That's actually in the budget bill, reduction of our population down to, you know, an out-of-state presence of about 340. There's some things that came out of Senator Sears that will hopefully reduce it even further. And then also, we have about 40 people in the custody of the U.S. Marshals that are housed in a Vermont jail. We get a preferential rate on their detainees. We suggested bumping it up to 60. They wanted to go to 85. I don't think we can do that and still manage our population. So what this means is less people would come back from out of state. So we're still bringing people back out of state, but 20 less. One of the things I would say on behalf of the marshals, a lot of the guys and people that, and mostly males, that they're picking up and are in their custody are Vermonters that are on federal crime. So when we needed a partnership down in Rutland to do drug sweeps and all these other things, the feds came in, and then marshals would pick them up. And so it seemed a little bit odd for me to say, okay, now take them over to somewhere else. So they asked us to go to 85. They have about 125 people in their custody on any given day, about 10 women, and the rest are all men. And so I said, I think we can go to 60. Let's try that, and then maybe at a later date, see if we can't bump it even higher.
So this is a money-making deal to do this? Because, I mean, the obvious question is, why aren't you using these beds for Vermont prisoners?
So basically, the 40 people that they have in Vermont jails gets about $2 million. If we go to 60, it would be about $3 million. That money does not come to the DOC. It goes to the general fund.
Okay.
So we don't see the benefit of it in the DOC, but the state does from as a general fund revenue.
Right, right. Okay. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free, 877-291-8255. Will you go back here? You said you had a vacancy in this superintendent's position down in Windsor.
Right.
How long has that been going on? Why is that the situation?
So we have we had a personnel change down in Windsor. We have an interim in right now. Basically, it's a classified employee. She gets mileage. Excuse me, Mark. Until we can recruit for a permanent replacement. But given that we're having this conversation with Windsor, and also I think that there's a I think there's a piece in the props bill that cuts, or at least level funds exempt salaries, it makes it that much more complicated to get a classified employee to step up and take this exempt job. So we're under recruitment, and I don't think the list is closed yet, but it'll be interesting to see who applies for it. One of my hopes would be that we have some state employees that are already in the Department of Corrections that will step up to run the facility. One of the, from my opinion, it's one of the toughest jobs in the state. It's 24/7, all the time you're responsible for the operation of the facility, and anyway, it'd be interesting to see how many applicants we get, given that Windsor's on the table to close in another year and a half.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Windsor facility, if it were to close, would have 55 staff people that you would lose.
Right.
Are there more positions being talked about above and beyond that with the reductions that need to be made in the workforce?
At this point, no. So it's the original contemplation was, I'm going to round the numbers, about 25 in the high school and then 55 in the Windsor, which is 80 in the Department of Corrections. We have about 1,070 staff. But there are, at this point, and I think that personnel cut's still in the appropriates bill, there isn't anything else being talked about at this point, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But
we still have to close that gap, though.
Okay. There was something I saw on the web over the weekend that talked about, I had never heard of this before, maybe you need to educate me, that Vermont somehow three prisons passed something called an anti-rape audit.
Yeah.
What the heck is that?
It's federal law, and it's called the Prison Rape Elimination Act. It's been law about 10 years, and the Prison Rape Elimination Act came with a bunch of criteria that you had to adhere to if you took federal money tied to the Bureau of Justice. And it's not just the DOC that takes money from the Bureau of Justice. Department of Public Safety does, the victims community does. It's kind of bled throughout the state. And one of the things that happened is they asked for a governor-signed memo that said, we are going to comply with the audits that come through. And the feds were going to come in, a federal auditor, federally trained auditor, and make sure that we complied all across the board with standards to meet whatever was laid out in the Prison Rape Elimination Act. A lot of states refused. Their grants were cut, so on and so forth. We figured we're going to do this. And we had three facilities go in the first round, and it was, oddly, Windsor was one
right.
of them.
It was.
Right. And they all passed, which mm-hmm. was a little bit surprising. I figured we would pass once we had a chance to remediate some deficiencies, but because it affects the Department of Human Resources, the agency, Department of Public Safety, it's a kind of a collaborative. It's a lot of things to pull together that require MOUs, memorandums of understanding, policy and procedure, all to augment this Prison Rape Elimination Act. And the fact that we passed on the first round, I was kind of pleased. We'll go through another round later this year, I think, for a second three facilities. And so we have to eventually get all seven sites through this PREA. It's called PREA for short, audit process.
What are the practices you have to put into place?
They're hiring standards and what you're still working on, how we treat people. It's reporting of sexual behavior in jail. One of the things Vermont was criticized for was how many sexual things we reported to the feds. We were really high because we were counting everything. If you made a comment, we counted that. Other states, it had to be much more egregious in order for them to count it and report it in. So it's how we report, how we investigate, how quick we investigate, how quick we move to the, I'm talking about employee misconduct now, how quick we move to a determination on those investigations, what we do if we have a serious sexual assault, whether or not public safety comes in, the Department of Public Safety comes in, how we treat the crime scene, all those things get audited.
Okay.
So it's pretty deep. And it took months, well, years to get ready, months to go through the audit process. And so I figured we'd do all right, but mm-hmm. we did phenomenally. In some cases, we passed every single standard, which was a pretty high bar. So I was pretty pleased to, one of the things as a department, you see the budget discussions, you see when somebody on release does something, but the good stuff kind of gets left off. So I was really happy that we were able to do this. So it's a quality standard, too. So not only are we doing it, but we're doing it well. It's kind of the way I, bring it together. But.
So is rape a non-issue in Vermont prisons?
Well, thankfully, it doesn't happen that much. We have very low instances of serious sexual assault in the state. We have very low instances of assault in our facilities. We're considered one of the safer states. A few years ago, we went through this piece where I felt like assaults were creeping. I called in some national experts who came in. They didn't charge us, and they basically said, you know, we don't have that much. It feels like a lot to you because maybe you have a few more. But, you know, we haven't had a serious incident in a correctional facility in 6 or 7 years. I mean, it's a really low rates of those types of violence. And one of the ways we do that is we run a fairly informal system, and we don't overcrowd. So our facilities are run between the 95 and 100% of capacity, not way over that like they do in other states.
What about prisoners out of state? Is that an issue?
For other states?
Yeah, the states where we're sending prisoners.
Well, so they have a different threshold, but they still have to go through their PREA piece. And so right now we're in Kentucky and Arizona. We have 300 people in Kentucky and 40 in Arizona, rounding that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to have our contractors go through these same level of standards. And so I think those institutions need to be audited as a part of their process. But again, part of the liability of running facilities out of state is we're not running them.
Right.
We contract with them. And in the end,
You cede authority, you cede control.
340 people out of state, we give them a little bit of, they have to have a little bit of latitude to do what, how they would, to run it the way they would run it. Now, we make frequent trips. We have caseworkers going down all the time. We spend probably, I don't know, close to $100,000 a year sending caseworkers back and forth. That was part of the original appropriation with our contract.
Mm-hmm.
We have phone calls with people that are in facilities, so on and so forth. So we're pretty rigid on, and we've gotten good at this over the period of time. But nonetheless, once we leave the building, anything can go. And so I don't know if you're aware, but that contract is up for rebid, and it's starts July 1, and mm-hmm. right now we're in negotiations, so I can't really talk too much about it, but...
Well, you've gone from 4 down to 2 that you're looking at,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Only 2, though, bid on the entire population. The other 2 bid on smaller segments of the population. So,
wow, really?
Yeah, I mean there's really only a couple of big providers of this service.
But it's not like that we had a lot of people.
No, a lot of states have laws similar to ours where we can't take people on contract because they're of the fear that people would come to the state and then stay here.
Okay.
And so you'd wind up importing a bunch of people into your state, and then their families would move, and they would wind up settling, and you'd wind up with high concentrations of people that you didn't have before, and so on and so forth. So that's really where those laws come from. I don't know if there's any truth to that. Right. One of the things we do when we, with our contract states, they don't reenter in those states. They come back here, and they reenter, and that's...
Okay.
Usually how that works. But we looked at New York State a while ago, and some of the counties have exceptions to their law, but they weren't interested in our full population. They're only interested in very small parts. So rather than split the population all up, it's easier to have them concentrated so we can manage them. Otherwise, we'd be sending caseworkers all over the country to do this stuff.
Right.
So we're down to 2 bidders. One is our current, and one's a new bidder. But again, they're the biggest providers of this service, and you know, the state's goal still is to try and close down that program to the extent that we can. We may get to a point where we only have maybe 100 people out of state, and we make a decision that we want this population there or something. I don't know. We're still in the middle of this migration of people coming back,
mm-hmm.
which is allowing us to save quite a bit of money.
Last question. So when this goes all over to the Senate, all this budget discussion, are you going to try to fight to keep the Windsor prison open or not?
Well, what I normally do is try and educate the process. Here's the downs of having the facility closed. Here's the impact. Certainly here's the population we're going to have to contemplate letting out. And so try and educate that process. I don't want to go in and advocate for something because I don't think it's fair to the process. They need to figure it out in the state house. I can simply, and you know, I have to tell you, one of the things the legislature was thrown this year is a pretty difficult budget, and I think, you know, I think the Appropriations Committee did an unbelievable job of trying to put something together, but So try and just educate. Here's what we're going to have to do, and here's the process we're going to have to go through. So just so you understand, here's where we are. And so we'll see how it turns out.
Thanks for your time this morning.
Great. Thank you, Mark.
Andy Polito is the commissioner of the Corrections Department here in Vermont. We'll take a short break. Coming up next, we're going to delve into the topic of climate change, and we'll do that in game fashion back after this.
McMahon and Morrisville is becoming a used car superstar.